the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's right. I love this American ride.
Well, hello, America. Welcome into it. No, it is not Todd Starnes. He is off another day for the Labor Day celebration. Andy Hoosier filling in, moving the Liberty University studios out to Wichita, Kansas, where I'm flagshipped out of here every single day. But hey, it's so great to have you on a post-Labor Day celebration. A Tuesday kind of throws off the whole work week, right? Hopefully you had yesterday off, and now you can set the tone, you can dial in, you can have some fun, and really, really get ready to go for a whole nother week. But have no fear, the Todd Starnes radio program is back after the holidays. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about for sure. Open lines to you, 901-260-5926, 901-260-5926. It was a great Labor Day. Hopefully you enjoyed whatever you do, fill in the blank for your celebration, whether it's camping or hiking or boating or just going to the lake, or whether it's staying home and just enjoying the adult beverages and maybe some barbecue, wherever you may be. I will say that for the first time in a weekend, I don't remember the last time that I did a whole lot of absolutely nothing. I've never seen before the TV show. Anybody, show of hands, anybody seen the show Prison Break? I think it was a Fox show, but it was on early 2000s. They did five seasons of it. It took them like 12 years to make five seasons, which I think is kind of strange. But I've never seen it before because I think it was at the same time that 24 was on. And I'm sorry, but Jack Bauer was kind of priority at the time. So, Dylan, I know. Have you seen 24? That's a good one.
Oh, I love 24.
Yeah, 24 is great. Have you seen Prison Break?
I'm working on my Prison Break binge, but haven't gotten to it yet.
Okay. So it's on your list. I had never even known of this show. The wife and I were trying to find something to watch. We finished up our show before. We're waiting on a couple others. I'm waiting for season two of Tulsa King to come out so I can enjoy that one because I've seen the first episode and I really want to watch it. But the second season comes out in September and I didn't want to watch and then wait. We binged through like all of Cobra Kai. So we were waiting on something and she said, let's try this Prison Break. Never heard of it. Early 2000s, apparently at the same time as 24, we're sucked in, man. And now we're like, I don't know, four or five episodes into season two. They are like hour-long episodes, so it takes us a while to get through them. But man, fantastic show. Highly recommend. It's on Hulu and on Netflix, whichever one of those streaming services that you have. But yeah, that was my weekend. I binge-watched Sunday and Monday. Oh, we watched almost an entire season of Prison Break altogether. So that was my weekend. Now we're ready to rock and roll and set the tone for a whole nother week. And now that we are past Labor Day, this kind of sets the stage for election season to be ramped up even more. Now, I will preface that by saying that we've already seen one of the most bizarre election years of our entire life. We've already had a sitting president that was an incumbent running for a second term step down after the primary process was done. We've had a former president that's already been had an attempt of an assassination, and other people try to attack him. We've had the VP that's been the most unpopular VP in American history that's taken the reign to be the great savior of the Democrat Party. We've nominated a governor that was a no-name governor and one of the most progressive governors in the entire nation to be on the ticket for the new running ticket here. And now we have a debate that's not really a debate because the debate has been really postponed to do one debate coming up next week on September 10th because they didn't want to agree to any others. We have a presidential ticket that does not have an actual platform at all that has hijacked the platform of the other candidate while saying that they're unique and that other candidate that they've stolen the platform from is evil and an authoritarian and a liar and a threat to democracy and a domestic terrorist or whatever else they want to call it. Throw in the words and the filler of what they like to use is that derogatory term for Donald Trump and everybody else. This has been the most bizarre election that at least in my lifetime, again, I'm 35 as a millennial, I've never seen an election like this before. And I'm pretty sure that most other individuals have not either. But now that Labor Day's done, this is when the election really ramps up. For those that may not be the addicted talk radio listener, the person that may not be part of a campaign, the person that may not focus on politics as a primary issue of their life, this is when they begin to finally start paying attention a little bit to what's going on. Now, I'm sure that with all the big news that's been going on, they've been kind of hearing it in the background, but this is where they start paying attention. And I've made a prediction, and I know Todd's talked about this quite a bit on the program as well, that now that we're going into this season, now the peak, at least in my opinion, the pinnacle of the support for Kamala Harris was hit right around this entire past month for the month of August, after the Democrat National Convention. Now that that's over, they really have to do the work. And the work is to reach out and try and reach new voters to let people know what you feel, what you're going to do, what you want to accomplish. Obviously, is semi-incumbent of what you've done in the past that's actually worked, what you'd like to change and what you'd like to tweak, what you'd like to do to move forward. This is where you reach the voters. And it's not starting off necessarily the best way, is over the weekend and actually yesterday on Labor Day. Of course, their favorite holiday in the world, because it was done by a bunch of labor unions and trying to get the workers off, which is really hysterical. Think about it, that you have the while you have a Labor Day trying to celebrate labor workers, you have the grocery store workers, you have the retail store workers, you have waitresses that are out there working yesterday on Labor Day for the office workers that got off to go out and do their shopping and do everything else that they do. I find that ironic, but that's what, you know, the hypocrisy of the left side of the aisle. They were at a rally yesterday in Pennsylvania, one of the big swing states, where Kamala, last as I've seen, was up by like a half a point. We'll see if that's still true or not. And we'll see if she resonated with some of the labor workers out there, because obviously it is a big manufacturing state that is a big area for labor unions. It is a lot of blue collar workers. And I'm still thinking that they would have done better if they chose Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, to properly be on that ticket and to really win over these people. But to me, the crowd sounded just a little bit small in Pennsylvania yesterday.
You better thank a union member for sick leave. You better thank a union member for paid leave. You better thank a union member for vacation time. Because what we know.
Hold on. What was that accent? Did you catch that? What, I mean, I know that we're trying to mimic what Democrats have done before us. And just like Hillary Clinton, just like so many others, that there have been a great number that have no idea how to properly relate to their constituency, which is why they take classes to do so. They try really, really hard. Chuck Schumer throwing the plastic cheese onto the hamburger that's still raw while it's on the grill. I'm grilling for 4th of July. Like, that's what we're up against right now. So I understand the whole trying to relate to certain demographics. I don't know exactly what that accent. Can we hear that one more time? What was that?
You better thank a union member for sick leave. You better thank a union member for paid leave. You
okay, that's that. Hold on. That's like a real. That's like a really bad attempt of a Southern drawl. You're in Pennsylvania, bro. That's not the South. That's not where you have that type of dialect, where Hillary Clinton and even Kamala Harris earlier in the campaign was down there trying to do that type of Southern drawl.
I don't feel no ways tired.
It doesn't work, but I guess, you know what, if you're talking to blue-collar workers and you have that demeanor against what blue-collar workers actually are, you know, you the truck driver, you that work in the manufacturing plant, you that work on the assembly line, you that actually work out in the fields as a farmer, you of those that actually have to be the ones that work with your hands and get your hands dirty. That's what she thinks of you. She thinks of you so highly that you have to have a Southern draw and you're probably not the smartest out there. You ain't got no higher degree in education. You ain't got no college education, so you're probably a Trump supporter. Like, that's what, it's so derogatory that it's almost offensive. And if my family was not part of that class, which they were, by the way, and I've grown up that way as well in the blue-collar family life, that if that's, I feel extremely offended right now because I don't identify as such. I can change my identification. This is like them saying that the black vote is too dumb and too poor to get a state-issued ID to get a voter registration card. Come on, man. And they're the ones that are supposed to represent us. I just don't get it. By the way, the whole message that she's trying to get, you can thank a labor union for this and thank a labor union for that. That's not necessarily true. That is a manipulation and a twisting of what history was all about during the Industrial Revolution. So we could go down that road, but it wouldn't matter to them because it's just banging our head against the wall. You can throw all the facts out in the world at them and they just don't care, because to them, they've created their reality. They've created the public education system to spread that false reality. And now people just think that it's a common core value. And by common core value, I mean, it's a core value to their inner self that if you challenge that core value and that core principle, they lose their mind. There's a difference between a policy that, you know what, we can spar on, we can disagree on, we can maybe evolve on. You present new facts to me. Oh, that makes sense. Okay, I'm going to shift my position a little bit. Then you have your core beliefs. And your core beliefs are, you know what, I am grass-rooted into them. They're not budging. You're not changing my mind on them. And most of those are like religious views for people. Those are, I'm a progressive because of these certain values. I'm a conservative because of these certain values. Like, those are core values that no matter what, they're not going to be shaken, even if someone presents you new information that you really feel uncomfortable accepting that new information and challenging those core beliefs. To them now, everything is a core belief. Everything. Taxes went down under Trump. No, they didn't. How dare you say something like that? Blasphemy. Donald Trump's a tyrant. Like that. It's not a healthy conversation. And so we can talk about the history of what labor unions did and how labor unions didn't actually make all the changes that they say they did. But it won't really matter to them because you and I, we're just a little bit smarter than that. We understand that a little bit more. At the same time, Joe Biden was out at the rally yesterday in Pennsylvania as well, doing his typical Joe Biden kind of thing.
By the way, we have an expression in Delaware. IBW, when I ran for president, they're the ones that brung me to the dance starting off. Not a joke.
What?
Compensate your bike fluid and get your brake working so you can stop sucking.
These guys are nuts. 901-260-5926. Your thoughts on now that the campaign is heating up, what's the next step for the Democrats? What's the next step for them to take their messaging to the next level and try and win over voters? Right now, the polls that I'm seeing, and this is according to the latest ABC poll, that on top issues, economy, inflation, immigration, and the Israeli war, that Donald Trump wins on all of them. This was reported by Fox News earlier this morning, that Donald Trump's winning on all of them by a long shot against Kamala Harris. What they're turning their issues into is stealing his platform, talking about these issues a little bit, but now Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are now launching their big national campaign bus tour talking about abortion and social issues, which they're trying to make the number one issue in this country. And while that may rally up some of the females in this nation, I'm curious on what exactly your definition of a female is, so that way you can go to the rally properly, wear the appropriate pink hat, and then you can support Kamala Harris by saying that you have the right to off your child if that's what you choose to do. If that's the number one issue for progressives, then I guess all the power to you, pat on the back. But as far as I'm aware, the number one issue that people have on their mind right now is, can I buy groceries? Can I buy medicine? Can I put gas in my car? And can I provide for my family? And oh, by the way, can we stop the ridiculous crime rates in this nation with the migration that's going on? That's what I think people are concerned about. That's what people want to talk about. And all of those issues, Donald Trump is winning hands down over Kamala Harris right now. 901-260-5926. Happy post-Labor Day. Let's get this ball rolling here. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Stay here.
You've asked and MyPillow listened. The most requested offer ever. Right now, you can get the queen-size premium MyPillow for only $19.98. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and I love MyPillow, made with patented adjustable fill. It adjusts to your exact individual needs regardless of your sleep position, and it helps keep your neck aligned. It holds its shape all night long so you get the best sleep of your life. But that's not all. You can also get a 6-piece kitchen or towel bath set for only $25 and the brand new mattress topper for as low as $69.98. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-839-8506. Use promo code STARNS to get huge discounts on all MyPillow products, including the premium queen-size MyPillow for only $19.98. That's the lowest price ever. So don't delay. Order now. Use my promo code STARNS at MyPillow.com or call 800-839-8506.
To have been suggesting for years that the measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you beat down. You know, that's the stuff they're pushing. That's right. Yeah. That the measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you beat down, when we know the true measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you lift up. Yeah. Who you lift up. Do you fight for workers? Do you fight for families? Do you fight for those who must be seen and heard and deserve
the dignity that comes with hard work. That's what we fight for.
Yeah, that's Kamala Harris at her Labor Day rally in Pennsylvania. First off, just listening to the crowd, which is hilarious because usually you can see a few people in the front. I don't see that with the way the camera angle is. It's zoomed in right to her with the few people in the back. Listening to it, it sounds like there's maybe like 20 people there. So I don't know how successful that campaign rally was, especially in a state when it's supposed to be a swing state. It was what, in Pittsburgh, I believe? That's your bread and butter right there, baby. That's where you're supposed to be rocking it and bringing in these 10, 20, 30,000 people into a rally. And obviously, that did not happen in Pittsburgh. And she tried to in Philadelphia, I think. Was it Philadelphia? When she had, but she had to have a rock star come in or some type of entertainment to come in to bring the crowd in. And then she went out and spoke afterwards. So she's trying to really push hard in Pennsylvania because it is a swing state. And when it comes to economic issues, Donald Trump obviously winning on that one. But the anger, do you hear that? I mean, I get it that labor unions are majoritively angry anyways. They just think that they want a revolution. They think that they're the communist takeover. Viva la revolution, baby. I mean, that's what they push. And I've, for those that listened at all, I've never been a big fan of labor unions. And I don't think that Todd Starnes is ill. I don't want to put any words in his mouth. But I've never been a big fan of labor unions at all. And these individuals, they're just militant. They're angry. And for her to go after and say, it's who you lift up, it's not who you beat down. Who's beating someone down? In their mind, the idea of capitalism, where it's not about equal opportunity, or it's not about equal outcome, but it's all about equal opportunity, they don't like that. They get very testy when it comes to that issue. Instead of saying, hey, you may not have a fair shake. Guess what? The world's not a fair place. It will never be a fair place whatsoever. What we are going to do is with the government, we're going to get the red tape out. We're going to get the regulation out. We're going to get the taxes out of your way. We're going to clear a path for you, and then you can do with your life whatever you want to. As long as you don't abridge the concerns of the three pillars of conservatism, which is the right to life, the right to liberty, and the right to private property. And by private property, we don't just mean like your actual property of your home and your possessions, but your intellectual property, your creative property. If you create something, if you're a business owner, you've created that business with your bare hands, with your blood, sweat, and tears. You understand that. You're trying to survive after the COVID-19 pandemic. You're trying to survive with 20% inflation rates right now. You get it as a small business owner. You're just trying to survive. That is your property. And as long as you don't violate the rights to life, liberty, and property, my three pillars of conservatism, then you're going to be just fine. To these individuals, that right there is an infringement on somebody else. They think that there is one singular pie out there, and that if you have more of it, then that means you took it out of the mouth of somebody else. Instead of the concept that the pie is ever growing, and you can create your own piece of the pie under a wonderful concept called capitalism and competition. I know you and I understand that. I don't mean to go down this road and just go and just kind of berate, but it's frustrating because we need almost a re-education of the system, don't we? We almost need a re-education of how the system works and how it works efficiently and how it doesn't work efficiently or inefficiently because of how much these individuals have manipulated the entire system. Speaking of, by the way, while they talk about trying to parade up and showcase how great Bidenomics has been, obviously, in the past week, we've seen the deduction of near 820,000 jobs from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, meaning that Bidenomics maybe didn't create the jobs that they said they did. Don't worry, Andy, there's still 15 million more jobs that they created. But now there's a new study that shows that fewer Americans are actually moving across the country. What does that mean? And it's down by near 7 to 9% across the country year over year, which is the first time we've seen that dramatic of a drop in a very long time. And there's many different aspects that we could speculate there, from the economy and Bidenomics to job opportunities to the cost of living, people not wanting to move to certain areas, people still living with their family members because they have no other opportunity, industries that aren't growing or moving their branches or doing anything else. People aren't migrating around the country. And if they are, it's moving away dramatically from larger states, Democrat states, high tax and high regulated states. Now put that one together. Very interesting. Got to take a break here on the Todd Starnes radio program.
In a world where healthcare costs spiral out of control, ShareRight emerges as the beacon of hope, offering healthcare done the right way. We understand the struggle of balancing health and finances. That's why ShareRight fosters a community of support, where members share medical expenses and encourage one another. Picture saving 30 to 50% on your healthcare bills. With ShareRite, it's not just a dream. It's reality, but it's more than just savings. ShareRite grants you the access to the care you deserve, precisely when you need it. From routine checkups to unexpected emergencies, don't settle for outdated insurance. Join the ShareRite movement and experience healthcare done the right way. Visit joinshareright.org to learn more and see how much you can save. Visit joinshareright.org for healthcare done the right way. That's joinshareright.org. ShareRite is a program of IHS, one of the fastest growing healthcare sharing organizations in the country.
Stearns Radio Program. My name's Andy Hoosier. So great to have you today on a post-Labor Day celebration, a Tuesday back at it, setting the tone for a whole nother week here. I have a new theory, and I think I want to run this past the Todd Stearns Radio Program listeners all over the country. I am going to say, by the way, my name's Andy Hoosier, based out of Wichita, Kansas, filling in for Todd today. I have a new theory and a social experiment that I want to try with you. I'm going to tell you that I am a superstar celebrity, that I am a Hollywood celebrity, and that I am just as popular as Sylvester Stallone. I'm just as popular as Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm just as popular as George Clooney. And if anybody says otherwise, or if they Google my name and they don't find any information because I may or may not be as popular as those individuals, then I can just say that I have bad grammar. I think I had the right to say that. I mean, Tim Walz was able to say it last week during that CNN sit-down with Kamala Harris, talking about his military record, right? I mean, he was able to say that I went overseas with weapons of war, and when challenged about that, because I never actually went overseas, then my wife said that I just have bad grammar. That's exactly what he said, and I think I can use that. So, ladies and gentlemen, I am just as popular as George Clooney, and if you don't agree with that, then, and if you challenge me on it, then I just have bad grammar. Yeah, we're going to go with that one today. What do you think? Let's go to it. I don't want to waste any time here as we sit down on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker Hotline. Really happy to have on the program here for the Todd Stearns Radio Show. He is the former chairman for the GOP out of the state of California, also former candidate for the U.S. Senate, and the author of the latest book, The Lessons of the American Civilizations. Really happy to have on the program with us today, Mr. Tom Del Beccaro. Tom, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, and hopefully my grammar is good tonight if I don't claim to be a Major League Baseball star.
Well, if you make that claim, then you can just say you have bad grammar, because apparently that's a justified excuse for it, right?
That was extraordinary on an extraordinary night.
What? It blows my mind. How can, and the weird part is, Tom, I guess it's weird, not weird, is that the anchor, that Dana Bash, didn't follow up on that and say, wait a second, you claim that you were overseas using these weapons, you've never actually been deployed, and then you your campaign at least says that it was a gaffe and that you shouldn't have said it, and you're claiming a grammar issue? That's your excuse? How many people actually be like, oh, okay, he just misspoke because his grammar's bad? Like, if your grammar's that bad, you probably shouldn't be running for vice president.
Or anything else. But, look, the whole night was odd. Television is obviously a visual medium. The first thing you see is her dressed in drab gray in a darkish room with a black table, and it just went on from there. She smiled not at all. I don't know if you know that I ran against her in 2016 for the United States Senate in California and debated her twice.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, and I actually, after the debate poll, I beat her in the California poll. Imagine that. Among Californians, I beat her in a poll after the debate. She's not quick on her feet, and she tends to meander. But a lot of non sequiturs from last night. Why didn't you do anything for 3.5 years? And then she goes into Trump. So here's the thing. This didn't happen in a vacuum, right? They made a decision not to do press for 40 days.
Yeah.
They created the tension. She brought someone with her. If your knock is, we don't know if you're prepared and you bring someone with her, you play into that.
Sure.
You beg them to say you're not ready even more. And then you give an interview where you have these non sequiturs. They asked her three times, you know, what are you going to do on day one? Now, look, I was chairman of the California Republican Party. I've run for office. I consult with many candidates over the years. I can't tell you how many. And the first thing they tell you at candidate school is you better have an answer to why you're running and what you're going to do. Forget everything else. Yeah. Don't, you know, were you a general or did you get shot at? No, you have to say, I'm running to do these three things. It took her three times to get to it day one. So I, you know, and then, of course, it's body language number one. If you can't look someone in the eye and you look away to answer, you're avoidant. Why are you avoidant? You're not telling the truth. It was not a good night.
It was not a good night.
And by the way, can I interview for a moment? Do you have any idea what she's going to do?
No, she mentioned something about child tax credits. And then when asked about her flip-flopping on certain records, then she said that she has values that she doesn't waver from and that she changed her opinion on fracking, but it didn't change her values, and that she's going to focus on climate change issues and child tax credits. I mean, that's essentially what we got from that entire thing last night. And when pressed on it at all, she just said, okay, let's move on. This is what I stand on, period, end of story. I didn't actually change my position. So we didn't get a whole lot of information at all, I don't think.
And that's the thing. If she had been giving interviews for 40 days and 40 nights, it wouldn't have mattered. But she created this tension. And if you're sitting in Pennsylvania or you're sitting in Wisconsin and Michigan, and some of these battleground states, and this is the first time she speaks, and that's her effort. I mean, how do you not say, I'm going to do these three things? It's astonishing. Yeah. But since I debated her twice, ran against her, I know she's not quick on her feet, but still, that's even bad preparation. I mean, this is, again, it's the number one question. If you're a candidate, and someone walks up to you and say, why are you running? You better have an answer.
Yeah, it's a really great point. It is fascinating to me that they've kept her in the dark for so long. Even Chuck Todd on NBC made a comment about that a couple days ago, that Republicans have made this into a bigger issue because they think they found a weak spot, which obviously we did since she won't do an interview. But he made the comment that if she had been doing tons of different interviews and sitting on podcasts and sitting with the media and doing Q&As, that if she made a little gaffe here and there, it wouldn't have made a big difference because it would be so watered down with so much content that she's putting out there. Like what Donald Trump does, because he just goes on every platform that's possibly out there for him to get his message out. But because she hasn't, all the eyes are focused on this interview. And I think she bombed it, like you said, big time on this. We didn't get anything from it. And now it makes her look even worse. Do you see, Tom, do you see her trying to do more interviews, especially leading up to a presidential debate that's set for September 10th?
No. And let me tell you, I don't know if people talk about this, but she is an insecure person. That's the genesis or the core of why she laughs nervously. She is insecure. And then you top that with she doesn't work hard. The LA Times, don't believe me, I mean, I wrote about this at Fox. The LA Times reported that in her first year, she missed 200 briefings as VP. 200, not 20, not 2. 200.
Wow.
And so she's never been known to work really hard. She failed the California bar. To fail the California bar, there's only two reasons. One, you probably shouldn't be a lawyer, but mainly it's you didn't work hard enough.
Sure.
Maybe you were distracted, but she didn't work hard enough. She doesn't work hard enough missing 200 briefings. She doesn't have a depth of knowledge. And so if she does more interviews, and I don't expect another interview before the debate because she's going to be working all the time. This is the human being that needs to have a mock dinner party so she knows how to talk to people.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. So we may not get much more out of her. And the question comes down to, you know, do her PR firms, I'm sorry, CNN and MSNBC, have the ability to carry across the finish line?
Yeah, well, right now, and this is where it kind of leads into your book a little bit here, is that we are at such a weird, I've never seen politics like this before. where even though she doesn't have a platform, she can't stand on her own 2 feet when she does an interview. That's why it was so brilliant when some of the Republican pundits were saying that Tim Walz was there to be the emotional support animal for her during the interview because she couldn't do it one-on-one. That doesn't really matter in today's times because Donald Trump, especially, is such a divisive character that the vast majority of her base are voting for her because she's not Donald Trump, and they want to make sure Donald Trump loses. That's all that matters, regardless of whatever she stands for. So does it really matter that she actually has any type of campaign platform at all?
Well, there are multiple dynamics going here. My book before the current was called The Divided Era, and it talks about the fact that the larger government grows, the greater the division. But also within that is what the Democrat Party has become, which is the party of big government, which historically becomes, once the socialist bug bites a party, it doesn't let go. And it is run more on this fervor of class warfare and the like than it is rational policies. So I'm sure you've seen the videos of when they asked people at the convention, what's your favorite Kamala Harris policy? And they couldn't answer.
Oh, yeah.
So they are running on these feelings. Plato, how many thousands of years ago, said that democracies would fail, I'm paraphrasing, because they would descend into beauty contests. What he's saying is it wouldn't be based on substance, and that's what you're seeing today. The question for Republicans is the response, and quite honestly, for the last 30 years, I have complained about the fact that Republicans have not learned how to marry policy with emotion. They do at times. The great ads with John Kerry with flip-flopping when he was on the sailboard gave that sense of emotional impact and also policy, that he's flipping on things, and that hit people quick. They have not done a good enough job with Kamala Harris because she is all over the place. She isn't changing one view. She's changing them all. Yeah. So who would believe that? They should do, you know, when you go to the big city and they have the guys on the sidewalk with cards, right?
Yeah.
And they should just flip her. Here's my thing today. Find my policy. Where did it go? Do something
point.
That's eye-catching.
I completely agree, my friend. We are out of time. It is Tom Del Vaccaro, former Republican chair for the state of California, author of the latest book, The Lessons of the American Civilizations. Tom, we appreciate the time very much, my friend. We got to get you back on the show and talk again real soon. Got to take a break. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Stay here.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
To it, the Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier sitting in today for a post Labor. I know Todd Starnes is out and about. He's traveling right now. I believe traveling to Washington, D.C. right now. So excited for him to get out there. So don't worry. We got you covered, brother. Always appreciate being able to sit in for Todd Starnes on the radio program today. 901-260-5926. So looking at who the left is trying to pander to and appeal to, I've been really racking my brain here because, again, outside of the it's not Donald Trump mentality, who else actually likes the fact that Democrats have Kamala Harris as the candidate? And I don't want to really beat that dead horse because I get it. We're now two months away from election season. We need to be able to have a game plan against her. But in order to be able to campaign properly against a certain candidate, you have to understand them. And right now, I'm trying to rack my brain on how you campaign against someone that doesn't have an actual platform. How do you go after somebody? Because we don't want to do personal, which is very crafty on their end. Very sneaky. I know what you're doing. If you don't have a platform, then if you go after somebody, then that means you have to do personal attacks. If you do personal attacks, then she can say that she's a victim because she's a woman. She's a woman of color, some type of minority descent, whatever that may be, depending on the day that she wants to emphasize one side or the other. Whatever. That's what she's doing. That's totally fine. And I guess it's the abortion issue. I was reading some of the comments, by the way, on the Todd Starnes video feed on Facebook, which you can find Todd Starnes on Facebook and follow him. And they do have the feed on there every day. I was reading the comments on there, and it's kind of interesting to see because some people say, well, of course, abortion is going to be the main issue. And Republicans need to respond accordingly. We have, haven't we? Donald Trump, I thought, said it brilliantly when he said essentially that why is this still an issue? We did what we said we were going to do. We reversed Roe v. Wade. We got it down from the federal level. It's now at the state level. And now you can battle it at the state levels to do what you will. Look, I'm from Kansas. That's where my flagship is here at KQAM, where I'm stationed every day for the Liberty University studios moving us out here today. I'm from Kansas. We're a relatively red state. I say red in a gray area. I guess it's more of a purple state. We have a Democrat governor, but we have a supermajority of Republicans in our state. But we also have a very liberal Supreme Court. And our state Supreme Court told us that abortion is a constitutionally protected right, while other states like Texas and Oklahoma and Missouri and this whole Mid-America region, while most of them have essentially banned abortions, we've opened the floodgates. And our abortion rates have skyrocketed in Kansas. People are coming from all over, coming in the droves to try and get an abortion in the state of Kansas. It's insane what we're seeing right now. And they're just like, totally fine. That's what you're allowed to do. But guess what? That's our system. That is the state of Kansas. I have to work on that. People in Kansas have to work on, not at a federal level to say, well, there's nothing we can do about it. No, we can do something about it. It's Kansas politics. That's what I have to work on. Other states have made their decision. They've either decided, yes, it's okay, or no, it's not okay to go down. But that's what we wanted as conservatives. For some of the never-Trumper Republicans to say that now we have to, now that we've reversed it to put it back at the states, now we have to re-implement our own policy at the federal level to try and ban it nationwide, I don't know that that resonates with the majority of Americans, including many Republicans. As conservatives, what do we want? We want limited government. We want state rights. We want to go back to the 10th Amendment where we have federalism and where if the federal government's not specifically mentioned with that power through the Constitution, then it goes back to the states to make their decision. Now, you can make the argument of my pillars of conservatism, for example, the right to life, liberty, and private property, where you can say, well, the very first one's the right to life, so therefore we have to defend that. And I wholeheartedly agree with that, but we have to do it at a limited government-powered ability, because if the federal government can say one way, that means they can also say the other way. And I don't want the federal government doing anything in my life. I want the state governments because it's more easily controlled at that level. In fact, I even want them to bring it down in many cases to county levels or to city levels or to local municipalities because I want as much local control as possible. Remember, as you're very well aware, if you're politically inclined at all, that politics is best at the local level. That's where all the change actually happens on a regular basis. Every decision that's made impacts you at a greater level at a local level, and that's why you need to fight for that as hard as you can. And that's why overall, overwhelmingly, Republicans do very well at local levels. We understand the grassroots campaigning, and I'm kind of excited about that type of mindset. The younger generation, though, we can't just look at it policy-wise from the Democrats. The younger generation, my generation, when asked about their top priorities, the vast majority of them, even Republican young generation-minded individuals, say that social issues are something that we have to talk about and address. And if that's what the campaign's going to be for Kamala, she's, I guess, going to do well at least talking about it, even though she has a very radical position on it. She's at least talking about it. Republicans, we need to talk about it, but we need to talk about the successes that we had. And Donald Trump's done that. Look, we reversed Roe v. Wade. We brought it down to the state level. What more do you want? Well, look at you. You flip-flopped on your issue down there in Florida with the decision that they went. No, we didn't. We've been very staunch, at least in my opinion, on what we believe, which is allow the states to make their decision and states can make it. Now, at the state level, if there's a bill that comes up and says, are you going to ban abortion? Are you going to open the floodgates and just allow anybody to have it all the way up until the third trimester or the time of birth? Absolutely not. We're going to put restrictions on that. And they're really working towards trying to pander to women. But how many mama bears now are active more so than any other time that I've ever seen? How many mama bears are concerned about crime rates, are concerned about abortion, are concerned about providing for their family, are concerned about protecting their children? How many mama bears out there? I know you're out there. I know you're listening right now. Have said enough's enough and are revolting against this mindset that if you're a woman, then obviously you're wearing a pink hat wanting an abortion up until the third trimester. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I think this is going to backfire in the Democrats' face. Lots more coming up. Stay right here on the Todd Stearns Radio Show.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Stearns.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. It is the Todd Stearns radio program. No, it is not Todd Stearns. He is traveling today out to Washington, D.C., as he's got so much working right now. It's so exciting to see what all Todd Stearns is doing. So he is off today. My name's Andy Hoosier. I am filling in today, moving the Liberty University studios out here to Wichita, Kansas, at my flagship radio station, KQAM, a great affiliate of the Todd Stearns radio program. And it is so great to have you today and a post-Labor Day weekend. Hopefully you had a great Labor Day weekend. Hopefully you enjoyed the adult beverages or the camping or the boating or the whatever else that you do on Labor Day weekend, because by golly, you need to thank a labor leader for that stuff, according to Kamala Harris, right? You need to thank them for what they gave us.
You better thank a union member for sick leave. You better thank a union member for paid leave. You better thank a union member for vacation time.
Yeah, I don't know where the accent came from, but hoorah, let's do that, baby.
Do it live.
It's what we do here on the Todd Stearns radio program. All right, here's how it goes. 901-260-5926, 901-260-5926, if you want to jump on the program as we look at election season, because now that we are post Labor Day, that means the election obviously is ramping up. We're on the 2 month final stretch, and the people that may not necessarily pay attention to politics as closely are now going to start paying attention. The headline on Drudge Report right now, which I do not recommend looking at Drudge Report any longer, just throwing it out there, my personal belief, that's it. I'm looking at Drudge Report. They are all about how great Kamala Harris and Tim Walz is doing right now. According to here's the headline right now, final sprint, the focus on seven states, and Harris is up by four nationwide, according to them, and a surge in the South. Now, those of y'all, I'm going to try and do the accent here because Kamala Harris can do it, so why can't I, right? We need to relate to our constituency. Y'all in the South, are you seeing that surge? Are you seeing that movement? Are you seeing that excitement, that energy building from Kamala Harris? Because I don't know that I necessarily am. There is an ABC poll that was posted on Fox News earlier today that showed the economy is sitting at the top issues: economy, inflation, immigration, and Israel. All three of them, Donald Trump are winning hand over right now. The economy up, Trump's up 46 to 38. Inflation, Trump's up 44 to 36 on his issues. Immigration, which Kamala says is her number one priority and how she's going to fix it somehow after being in office for 3.5 years, as the immigration czar. Oh, can I not say the immigration czar? Immigration, Trump's up 45 to 36. And the Israeli-Hamas war, Donald Trump's over Kamala Harris 40 to 33. So if we're talking about issues themselves, Donald Trump's winning. Where some of these polls show that he's down by 4 points over Harris in these swings, I don't quite know where that's at. Talking about some of that and so much more, as now we shift into the next gear for election season. Happy to have on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker Hotline. She is a spokesperson for the RNC committee. Really happy to have on here Elizabeth Pipko. Elizabeth, how are you, my friend?
Doing okay. How are you?
Doing great. I'm so excited to talk with you. I appreciate you jumping on with us today. This is getting down to the wire. I've never seen an election like this before. We're seeing polls all over the place, which, again, take polls with a grain of salt right now. But from the Republican side, from the RNC internally, what are you hearing right now? Because I don't see any energy or momentum coming from the Harris and Walz campaign.
I completely agree. Look, we are all honest with ourselves over here, especially someone like me who's been working for Donald Trump on and off for 8 years now. I look at polls, like you said, with a grain of salt. But I also have to be honest. So I'm looking at things. I'm looking for this bump. I'm looking for the excitement. I'm not seeing it. We obviously saw a bit of a bump after Joe Biden was forced out of the ticket, right? When Kamala Harris came in, there was a bump. We all saw that bump, and it was because of the excitement, I guess, for not having to vote for Joe Biden again in this election. However, we did not see a post-convention bump. I am not seeing excitement anywhere. And like you just mentioned, there are issues that are at the forefront of the minds of the American people. Those haven't changed. If anything, those issues have only gotten more intense for people. When we talk about the economy, it's only getting worse. When we talk about immigration and how we're all impacted by those being allowed across our border, it's only getting worse. Obviously, I don't have to tell anyone what's happening in the Middle East is only getting worse after we saw what happened on Saturday when an American was taken, kidnapped, tortured for nearly 11 months and murdered. And our administration right now says nothing. In fact, Joe Biden was at the beach all week. So there's a reason Donald Trump is leading when it comes to all those issues that matter to the American people. And I know that when they hear from Kamala Harris for the first time, because let's be honest, she does not speak very often to the public, when they hear from her at that debate head to head against Donald Trump, they will see that there's a reason they support him over her on all these major issues. And more Americans will realize he is the only choice for us on November 5th.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've never seen such a lack of transparency. In fact, over the weekend when she was doing her rallies traveling, that she had her earbuds in to where she wouldn't even take questions from the media as she walked from, you know, the limo to the airplane and back and forth. She just completely zoned out, has no interest in wanting to talk to individuals at all, which to me is very concerning. So, Elizabeth, what is the strategy from the Republican Party, from the RNC, and from the Trump campaign on a candidate that doesn't have a clear policy platform of exactly what she's going to do? Is someone who loves to play the identity politics and play the victim when it suits her very well, who really is just campaigning to say, I was the most unpopular VP in modern American history, but now I'm not Trump, so therefore I'm a great candidate, and is the most progressive, radical ticket that we've ever seen in American history, including Barack Obama, including Jimmy Carter, even including FDR back in the day. What's the campaign strategy to go after something like that? Because they've almost set it up to where if you say anything against her, then now she's a victim and you're evil for saying anything.
Yeah, look, I like what you said about how she's running basically on the fact that she is not Donald Trump. And I think that's what we've seen over these last 8 years from the Democrats. It's a lot of rhetoric and it's a lot of, hey, I can't keep my promises and I probably can't lower your gas bills and I probably can't keep any of the promises I made when I was running, but at least I'm not Donald Trump. And for a point in time, that could work because the American people live much better lives than those around the world. We are very privileged in this country. I always talk about the fact that I was raised by two immigrants, and that's why I know what it means to be an American and how lucky I am to be here. And that's why I really don't take for granted the safety and security that we all feel as Americans, because I know what my parents and so many others went through to get that. However, when things are as bad as they are, like they are right now, when people physically cannot afford to pay their bills, when in certain states like Pennsylvania, for example, families are spending nearly $1,000 more a month than they were before, those are real numbers. That really impacts people. When people are scared because they're hearing warnings of World War III because of what's happening in Ukraine and what's happening in Israel, when people are hearing about people on terrorist watch lists coming into their country, that's when you start thinking, hey, maybe I shouldn't vote for someone just because she's not Donald Trump, right? Maybe I don't like this guy, but there's a reason we were safe when he was in office. There's a reason I could afford to pay my gas bill. And maybe those mean tweets that scared me so much might be the reason my country was safe and the world was at peace for 4 years. So I think for us, the strategy is just reminding people what we're up against, right? It's reminding people of the promises that were made and kept by Donald Trump, reminding people of the promises that were made and not kept, obviously, by this administration, which Kamala Harris cannot really separate herself from because she's currently in the White House and because Joe Biden is at the beach. So the only person who takes responsibility for anything happening right now is Kamala Harris, the one who is in the White House, who seems to be remotely competent and who is clearly on the ticket for a reason because they believe Joe Biden could not handle that. The American people have a choice to make, and that choice is very simple because we have 4 years of Donald Trump to compare against 4 years of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. It's a very special kind of election. This doesn't happen very often. It's almost two incumbents going head to head. So the strategy is reminding people what they had under Donald Trump and how he truly does align with the majority of the American people on most issues. If they look at the facts and the policy and sheets of paper in front of them with everything written out in writing and not the media trying to spin everything to scare people off of, unfortunately, voting for the man who was better for them and this nation than the alternative.
It's a very simple solution. Yeah, look at what we were 4 years ago compared to what we are right now, and it's a very easy choice to make on that front. We're talking with Elizabeth Pipko. She is the RNC National Spokeswoman. Let's bring it down to some of the lower down ballot tickets across the nation. Obviously, we have a really great chance of keeping and maintaining the House of Representatives, maybe even gaining a few seats there. And I know there's a real big focus on a few of the Senate seats across the nation. I saw a headline from Fox News earlier today about Mike Rogers being tied with the Democrat opponent there in Michigan, possibly being able to swing some of these in Michigan, for crying out loud. That's supposed to be like a deep blue state, according to some of these progressives. How are these seats shaping up? And from the RNC side, what are some of the big races that you guys are focused on right now across the nation to see that we can get this majority in Congress?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Michigan. It's an incredibly important state. We're talking about the presidential race as well as down ballot. You mentioned the Senate race. We obviously have some House seats in there we're looking at as well, District 7 and 8. I was talking about with someone this morning. Other states apart from Michigan, I'm looking at Arizona, right? That's incredibly important for us both when we're talking about the presidential level and that Senate seat, which Carrie Lake is obviously running for. I believe a Republican has not been elected to the Senate there since John McCain in 2016. It's incredibly important. We know how important Arizona is in when it comes to Donald Trump winning this race, so that's huge. We also are looking to flip the Senate with the chances that we have in states like Montana, for example, and Ohio, for example. There's a lot that's looking good for us since Joe Manchin, for example, said he wasn't running for re-election and left the Democrat Party as well. So I think the focus is on quite a few places around the country, but certainly Senate seats. We're talking Montana, we're talking Arizona, and we're talking Ohio.
That's exciting. That would be really exciting. Could you imagine? Now, last time when we went into a 2016 race and Donald Trump won, we had kind of that inner bickering within the Republican Party, and that unfortunately the Republicans are what sabotaged our own agenda of trying to get things done. I got to admit, I've never seen such unity in the Republican Party right now as I have in past elections, which is really encouraging to me. Because people realize how radical the other side has gone. And if we can get the House, if we can get the Senate, if we can get the presidency, which I'm optimistic on all three of those fronts, the unity from the GOP right now, to me, is really exciting that we could see this this pendulum begin to swing back the other way pretty dramatically, couldn't we?
1,000%. I always tell people I would not have taken this job as a spokeswoman for the RNC if the candidate was anyone other than Donald Trump. The message of America First is one that unifies everyone. We are a proud RNC/Trump campaign team over here. We have a great team with Michael Whatley and Laura Trump, obviously at the helm of the RNC. We have a great campaign. And again, only Donald Trump could do this. Only Donald Trump could change not only the state of our elections in the country, but could change the Republican Party in the way that he has and as quickly as he has. He's inspired so many people that I know from both sides of the aisle. By the way, so many new Republican voters voting this November just because they believe in that America First message. I'm proud to be a part of it. And I hope more and more people come on board and realize it's really not that scary to just want to put your country and your fellow Americans first.
Yeah, what a concept. Elizabeth, last question for you, and I appreciate your time very much. You mentioned new people coming on board and registering as Republican. The outreach to new demographics that we normally haven't as Republicans reach out to in a very long time. When Trump went and did his rally in the Bronx, when he spoke at the National Libertarian Convention, inviting people that have normally haven't heard of conservative and Republican policy platforms on what we stand for and what we believe in, reaching out to so many new people that we normally don't during a campaign season. That's encouraging to me, and I think that's going to really help change the dynamic of this election when we see minority votes or women votes or whatever fill-in-the-blank identity politics they want to use. Do you feel confident that we've done better at this than we have in the past, do you think?
I do, and I think it's not just about this election coming up in November, which I am very confident in, but it's about what you mentioned, changing that dynamic, because no party in this country, Republican or Democrat, should feel as though they are entitled to any votes from any single group, right? There's a certain loyalty the Democrats seem to expect from Jewish voters, female voters, Black voters, Hispanic voters, so many other groups. That's what I stand against. You should have to, every 4 years, fight to get the support of the American people and every single minority group, everyone in between, because that's what elections are for, right? Not to just run every 4 years and expect certain people to continue voting for you blindly, no matter what the results are that they get. That's what Donald Trump has changed. That's what changed the dynamic of this race, and that's what's going to make Kamala Harris and the Democrats have to work, because Jewish voters are calling me, Black voters are calling me, Latino voters are calling me and saying, I don't like what I'm seeing anymore. I don't know if I can keep voting for this party. And that's because Donald Trump believes that we are all American. We are all on one team. It doesn't matter what separates us, because our nationality, our pride in this country is what brings us together. And when America is successful, we're all successful. And I truly believe the majority of people in this country are sick of the Democrats feeling as though they owe them their votes.
It is so encouraging to hear. I absolutely love it, and you're absolutely right. The Democrats are self-imploding by putting people in so many different boxes of identity politics that now they're all starting to crumble, and that house of cards is falling before them. It is Elizabeth Pipko, RNC National Spokeswoman. Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming on the program, my friend. We really appreciate it. We got to talk to you again real soon.
Sounds good. I look forward to it. Thank you.
Likewise. Appreciate it. Got to take a break back after this here on the Todd Starnes radio program. Stay here. Welcome back into it. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. So great to have you today on a Tuesday, the post-Monday, the post-Labor Day celebration. And we appreciate Elizabeth Pipko coming on the show from the RNC. I love the optimism. Now, obviously, campaigns are going to talk about their optimism, but I see it. I mean, you kind of got a sixth sense for these things, right? You can feel the energy one way or the other. The month of August was the month for the Democrats to have their energy. That's gone now. We literally just had a rally in Pennsylvania, a swing state where Kamala's out there talking about unions with 30 people in the crowd, where you could tell just by the audio of who's clapping and in the loudness of how they cheer that there's like three people you can hear. So you can see where the energy is, and she's going to continue to dwindle. What that popularity looked like at the beginning of August was the best that she's going to be, in my opinion, this entire time. All right, 901-260-5926, 901-260-5926. I believe we have a caller on the line. Good afternoon. How's it going?
Good. How are you, Andy?
Living the dream, my friend. What's happening?
Well, I'm calling to see what you think about the Senate. Now, if we can flip the Senate and we can get the majority, right now we got Mitch McConnell as the minority leader, and he's supposed to be stepping down. I'm concerned who's going to replace him, whether they're going to be behind Trump and help him execute his policies, unlike the Senate back in 16 and 17, where they left him out pretty much hanging out to dry. What are your thoughts on, you know, the Senate and who's waiting in the wings to replace Mitch?
Yeah, that's a really great point. I'm glad you brought that up. So, yeah, Mitch McConnell is stepping down. From not only necessarily a Senate seat, but stepping down from the leadership that he has with the Senate committee that funds essentially what Senate races they're going to focus on and pay attention to during campaign season, which is very much needed, obviously, because he did not focus on the right races that we needed in the last election that could have gave us a majority, in my opinion. But he chose not to do so, because I think throughout his career, he's been one that's really loved to focus on playing the guy of, well, I would love to do stuff, but I can't because we don't have the majority, and wanting to stay as the minority leader. On potential names, who's come up and going to replace him? That is a great question. I don't know. I know my senator here in Kansas, Jerry Moran, has aspirations to do so. And I'll tell you, first and foremost, I am not a fan of him, nor what he's done majoritively in Washington, D.C. So I don't know who's going to lead it. I will say that there are still some quote-unquote rhinos that are never Trumpers that may fight against Trump if they become in leadership positions in the Republican Party in both the House and the Senate. But I think that that list is a short list compared to what we've seen in the past, especially in 2016 when Trump took office the first time, that the majority of Republicans now in both chambers are wanting to work with Trump, are wanting to get things done, and I think will be much more friendly to him. So, Dan, that's a great question, and we need to be very careful of who we actually nominate. I know different names have popped up, from Byron Donalds to Jerry Moran here in Kansas to some others that are potential names to replace him as that Senate Minority Leader and to head up the Senate Republican Committee and see if we can actually get someone in to focus on the appropriate races and the candidates that we need. But we'll see. We'll see what happens, but that's something we need to pay attention to. Dan, really great question. Appreciate that very much. Got to take a break. Lots more coming up here in the Todd Starnes radio program. Stay here. Welcome back into the Todd Starnes radio program. So great to have you on a post-Monday, post-Labor Day celebration. There's so many things to talk about. We're going to try and cram as much of it as we possibly can into the Todd Starnes Radio Show today. My name's Andy Hoosier, again, moving the Liberty University Studios out here to Wichita, Kansas, my flagship KQAM, where we are a great affiliate of the Todd Starnes program. So happy to have him on our airwaves and so many other airwaves across the nation. 901-260-5926. It was a great question from Dan in the last segment. We can continue that conversation here in just a moment. So we're going to change things up just a little bit here. We were going to have a guest on the program from the great state of Colorado talking about some of the migrant crises that are going on there. Now, obviously, it's an issue going on all over the country, but they're not able to join because apparently there's a 911 crisis happening right now as we speak, which is totally fine because we've seen the videos. I get it. Do your deal, man. Do your thing because there is a crisis. Now, for those that don't know, I grew up in Colorado. I moved there in the eighth grade and I went all through high school there. I went to my broadcasting school out there. I got my radio experience in Denver in Colorado. I grew up about an hour outside of Denver up in the mountains, a little town of Bailey, Colorado, about 30 minutes outside of South Park, Colorado. Yes, it is a real town of South Park if you watch that TV show. And I grew up in that area. I'm very familiar with Colorado politics. And what we're seeing in Colorado right now, if you haven't seen these videos, some of them started surfacing in this past week, it's very troubling. Now, we've known that this has been going on in the nation for a while, of stories of girls that have been attacked, that have been murdered, that have been raped in cities like in states of California, in cities like Chicago and New York. This is happening all over the place. And in large part, not because of everyone. We're going to try and say they're going to use the trigger words of the Todd Starnes radio program says that their race is the brown people coming across the border like Donald Trump said. Right. That's not it. So shut up. That's not the case. So just don't even try to bring that up. But there are migrants, unfortunately, that have done some very bad things, illegal aliens that, first off, they broke the law coming here illegally, and they've committed a lot of crimes. Not all of them, not everybody, so don't try and lump it in and do that 30,000-foot view by generalizing, but there are some bad things that are happening, obviously. Crime rates are through the roof, and this is one of the major issues that we have going into this election season, and we need to be aware of what's happening, and they can try and use abortion on the other side is their number one issue to campaign on. But at the end of the day, people want the economy to do well, and they want to make sure that they can walk out in their front yard without getting shot or getting attacked or getting kidnapped in some fashion. There's some video surfacing out of Colorado and a town of Aurora, Colorado. For those that don't know, that's a suburb of Denver on, I believe, the southeast side of Denver. Again, I was more in the Lakewood area, which is on the west side because that's where I used to work and do my thing. Now, Aurora is a branch of Denver. And if you've seen the videos that have been leaked, there are gang members that have, I hate to use this terminology, but for the sake of the mainstream media to understand what we're talking about, they were handling assault weapons. And they're walking door to door in apartment complexes and hotels, going door to door, knocking on the doors, busting into the doors, and breaking in and taking what they want. The gangs have been taken to another level where they believe it was activity from MS-13. We were going to have on a city councilwoman from the city of Aurora to talk about some of this and not able to join us right now. Not a big deal. We'll try and get her on later on. But this is happening all over the nation, and now we're seeing gang-related violence where American gangs are fighting foreign gangs. And if we're going to go down that road, I got to be honest, I kind of want the American gang to win. Not that I want power from American gangs at all, or any gang to be a matter of fact, but they're realizing that there's a serious issue happening right now. And in a city like Colorado, in Denver, Colorado, that's something that we should be concerned about. I mean, we hear about it in San Francisco, we hear about it in Los Angeles, and it's like, well, you kind of had it coming with your social experiment and your blue left-leaning elected officials that have allowed this to happen. But Colorado's been going down that road for a while now. And watching what's happening out there is pretty devastating. I ask the simple question is, where is the response from the Biden administration? Where's the response from Kamala Harris? They're the ones that are on the campaign trail. And don't tell me that Joe Biden's only on the beach because he was literally at a rally in Pennsylvania in front of the 30 people talking about the whatever he tried to say before about how great the unions are to him.
By the way, we have an expression in Delaware. IBW, when I ran for president, they're the ones that brung me to the dance starting off.
I don't know what that means. But whatever it is, He's on the campaign trail trying to say things. There's noise coming out of his vocal cords and his mouth. What they articulate to is kind of up for debate. We need our Joe Biden decoder ring for that one. But nonetheless, he's out there saying something. Where's the response from him on the fact that we have video of foreign gangs, MS-13 gangs, that are there door knocking on people in hotels, in apartment complexes, and taking what they want? Where's the response? When we're supposed to have a nation that has a very beefed up, by the way, National Security Department and the CIA and the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security and all these other agencies that are spying on you and me because we're not allowed to post content that may conflict to what the government tells us to on vaccines or masks or, you know, content from the federal government or Jeffrey Epstein or whatever else. While we're not allowed to post that kind of content, they literally are allowing these people to do what they do in our streets day in and day out. The priorities aren't there. The priorities are just a little bit skewed, I would say. And we're allowing this. So where's the response? Where is the declaration of emergency from the local government saying, hey, we have a serious problem? That probably won't happen in Colorado and in Denver, especially because Denver, I believe, has tried to declare themselves to be a sanctuary city to allow illegal migrants to come in under the leadership of Democrat Governor Jared Polis, the governor of the state of Colorado. Same with Gavin Newsom out in California and other metropolitan areas all over the country that think that this is the humanitarian way to allow things to happen. Now, on again, since we don't have an official statement from the Democrats, since we don't have an official platform from Kamala Harris, we kind of have to fill in the blanks ourselves because she won't give us anything else. In fact, she goes out of her way not to give us anything else because she walks from the limo to the airplane putting on earbuds so that way she doesn't have to hear the media call out her name and her answer anything because she's so untransparent that Democrats are totally fine with it that she just doesn't care. So we have to fill in the blanks ourselves, which leads us back to the conversation that we had on Thursday last week before the Labor Day weekend with the conversation of CNN and the sit down where Kamala talks about her great experience when it comes to immigration policy.
As Vice President, you were tasked with addressing the root causes of migration in southern countries and
northern part of Central America.
The northern part of Central America that deals with, that affects the southern border of the U.S. Mm-hmm. During the Biden-Harris administration, there were record numbers of illegal border crossings. Why did the Biden-Harris administration wait 3.5 years to implement sweeping asylum restrictions?
Okay, first, before she answers, I have to say, I'm not a journalist, but recognizing what journalism is, that's actually a semi-decent question, is it not? It's actually a good question to see how she responds, but she didn't respond in a way that actually would allow a journalist to actually follow up and grill her and push her a little bit harder on the issue.
Well, first of all, the root causes work that I did as vice president that I was asked to do by the president has actually resulted in a number of benefits, including historic investments by American businesses in that region. The number of immigrants coming from that region has actually reduced.
Okay, hold on here. First, did she just admit, we're going to have to play that again, did she just admit that she was tasked with a duty to handle issues at the southern border almost like an immigration czar? Now, we're not allowed to say that term, so I'm sorry. I retract that. That's bad. If you look that up, that was just the wrong grammar. That was the wrong grammar that Kamala was using to explain what she was doing as her job. But as the vice president that was tasked, as a czar would do in the unofficial terms of a federal government agent that's tasked to do a certain project, the czar overseeing that type of project, that she was tasked to work with Central American countries to try and figure out why people are coming to our border like that, which she says that we've seen a reduction of migrants from those areas. Maybe we saw them from those areas, but we've seen an increase of all over the other parts of the world, like China and Russia and other parts of Africa and everywhere else, where that's not what the whole term of asylum seeking is supposed to represent or how the laws are supposed to go when it comes to asylum seeking. But we just kind of welcome them in. In fact, we just encourage them and fly them in ourselves. Right. So she's very successful on this issue
since we began that work. But I will say this, that Joe Biden and I and our administration worked with members of the United States Congress on an immigration
issue. I can't. I know it. She's going to go down the road of the whole bipartisan bill that was tried earlier this year and then put up a second time by Democrats knowing it wasn't going to go anywhere. It wasn't a very popular bill. Didn't actually stop anything, but that was their plan. We've already passed H.R. 2 in the House like 2 years ago, a year ago, whenever it was. They refused to look at that one, but it's their bill that's actually going to solve the issues because the other one's a racist bill that will stop people from coming in, which is kind of the point, to stop people from coming in illegally. You have to put that term in there. Illegally. As Donald Trump says, we want the big, beautiful door, and we want people to come in legally, and we want to make sure that they don't have any malicious intent here in the nation. The journalist, Dana Bash, during that interview, did press a little bit about her being Kamala Harris, raising her hand in supporting of decriminalizing the border, which was an interesting response as well.
Did you misspeak, as the campaign has said?
Yeah, I said we were.
No, that's the wrong one. Let's try. Where'd it go? Oh, let's try this one.
There was a debate. You raised your hand when asked whether or not the border should be decriminalized. Do you still believe that?
I believe there should be consequence. We have laws that have to be followed and enforced that address and deal with people who cross our border illegally.
That's a non-answer, but that's what we get. So fill in the blank. Use your imagination of what Kamala actually stands for on immigration policy. When she rose her hand before about decriminalizing the border, she's been an extreme radical. And then when asked about raising her hand to decriminalize the border, she says, well, there's laws and we have to enforce them. And I've done the best at enforcing them because I was an attorney general and I've been a legal scholar and I was a senator and I voted for all this other garbage. When that means absolutely nothing, when we see migrants, MS-13 gang members get assault rifles and then attack hotels and apartment buildings all over the country, the latest ones coming out of Denver, by just raiding and taking whatever they want to. This is a serious issue, and it's very scary. Let's go to the phone, shall we? 901-260-5926. Let's go to Janice on the home station there on KWAM in Memphis, Tennessee. Janice, how are you today?
Hello, how are you?
I am great. How are you today? Yeah.
What's your name, sir?
Andy.
Oh, Andy. Okay. Here's the thing. This is really an awful thing that's happening in our country, and I don't know if anyone is listening to me who is leaning towards Kamala and doesn't want to vote for Trump, but I'm telling you something. If you care anything about your country, about your very own family, you have got to vote for Donald Trump. When I first heard him say that other countries were letting people out of jail and that criminals were coming here from other countries and stuff, I blew that off a little bit.
Sure.
But now I realize that the man was speaking truth. The other day I was listening to a podcast, and they were saying that too, that in these other countries what they're doing is they're letting their criminals out of jail and telling them, you cannot stay here. So then that means that they're coming across our border. And today, it might be an apartment building in Colorado, but tomorrow, who's to say it won't be the front door of your house? And here is something, a question that came to mind. These weapons, I saw the video. There's a video online, people, and you can see them in the apartment building, walking around with all these guns. One of my questions is, where did they get these guns from? How are they getting them? Where are they getting them from? Why isn't the United States taking these guns away from these people and doing something with them to get them out of our country? This is highly serious, and if we have any Trump haters out there, please stop hating on the man. I don't care about his personality. I care about his policies. In my very own state, about a month and a half ago, we had 2 18-year-olds that were hit by a DUI driver. And the 2 18-year-olds are dead. A week ago, Friday, a man was on the Crescent City Connection. He worked for WGNO Television. And I am sorry to say that he is now dead. People are dying each and every day in this country at the hands of people that Kamala Harris and Biden have allowed to come into our country. This is a very, very serious matter, people, because if we don't vote Trump in to get that border taken care of, our entire country is going to be taken over. And you have got to understand this. Please, I am asking you and begging you for everyone's sake. Everybody. I care about everybody. I don't care if you're old, young, black, white, pink, purple. It doesn't matter to me. Gay, straight, trans, I don't care. We have to protect our country and our people.
Janice, I am right there with you. I am so glad that you called and told us that. And I can feel the frustration. I can feel the passion and the energy that you have. And you're absolutely right. This is going to be on your doorstep. They say that every time with a shooting where they're like, this could never happen in my community. And then when it does, I never thought this could happen in my community. You're right. People may not like Donald Trump and they may think that he's nuts. They may just disregard everything that he says, but what he said came true. What he said came to fruition. We're seeing these gangs now on our streets when he told us that was going to happen and people blew him off. We got to take a break, Janice. I appreciate that very much. Thank you for calling in and let us know exactly where you stand. The plea from individuals all over this country to listen what Donald Trump has to say. Got to take a break. Todd Starnes radio program. Stay here. Welcome back to it. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. I want to tell you about our friends over at MyPillow. You asked and MyPillow did listen. They're finally bringing you the most requested offer ever right now, where you can get this queen size premium MyPillow for only $19.98. What a deal. MyPillow is made with patented adjustable fill. It adjusts with your exact individual needs, regardless of your sleeping position, and helps your neck align. It holds its shape all night long to where you can get the best night's sleep of your entire life. But that's not all. They have other great specials going on right now as well. You can get your six-piece kitchen or bath towel set for only $25. The brand-new mattress topper as low as $69.98, and their famous MyPillow bed sheets as low as $25, and so many other great discounts right now. Go to MyPillow.com, or you can call 800-839-8506. Use promo code STARNS and get your huge discounts on all of the MyPillow products, including that premium queen-size MyPillow, only $19.98. That's the lowest price ever. Come on, don't delay. Order today. Use promo code STARNS at checkout at MyPillow.com. Again, MyPillow.com, or call 800-839-8506. Great partners with us right here on the Todd Starnes radio program. Okay, when we come back around the corner for hour number three, there was a piece that was posted out of the New York Times, actually, over the weekend on the threats of the Constitution. Is the Constitution dangerous for society, or is it just dangerous for progressives? Well, read some of that when we come back. Plus, as we continue on this conversation about the threats with migrants and the threats with the gang members, these gangs are going to be flooding the streets all over the country. Are you prepared for something like that? And as Janice mentioned, where did they get these firearms? I can guarantee you, I'm pretty sure that these gang members didn't get their firearms by legally purchasing them at a gun store and doing a background check with the federal government in the ATF, because that would be hilarious. But no, that didn't actually happen. So they got those black market, which means there's always going to be a black market, which means you're having your rights restricted to get your firearm. Lots more coming up. Stay here.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
What's up, America? Welcome into it. It is hour number three of the Todd Starnes radio program. Todd Starnes out today. He's actually traveling to Washington, D.C., so not available to jump behind the microphone here at the Liberty University Studios. But don't worry, we got your back. Have no fear. The Todd Starnes radio program is still here as we're just moving the Liberty University Studios out here to Wichita, Kansas, my flagship station of KQAM, a great affiliate of the Todd Starnes radio program. And it's so great to, again, be with you for a post-Monday and a post-Labor Day celebration. Now that you're trying to get back into the swing of things, I get it. It's difficult. It's hard to set that tone again. It's hard to get back into the swing if you've had an extended holiday. If you got an extended holiday. If not, then it's just another day for you. Totally understand that. But if you did enjoy, then let's go ahead and set that tone. As I always like to say, we're going to carpe diem all over this place, baby. That's what we do. All right, coming up on the show, bottom of the hour for this hour, Troy Anderson will be joining us. He is the author of the latest book, The Trump Code. What is Donald Trump planning on doing the first 100 days of his administration? Also, what type of legacy is he going to have, and will it be relatable to some of the greats in this nation, like Washington, like Abraham Lincoln, like maybe Ronald Reagan? Does he fit into that caliber of type of leadership and presidency that he had in term number one, and can he do that even to another level in term number two if he gets back in there? So we'll talk about all that and more coming up at the bottom of the hour. If you'd like to join the program, it's open lines to you for this half hour at 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. Would love to hear from you. We've had some great phone calls throughout the program today already. I got to bring up the question of one of the bigger issues, which I never thought would necessarily be an issue, but it makes sense with the way technology is going. Freedom of speech. Do you really have it? Do you get to enjoy it? And why is it such a threat to an authoritarian government? That last question obviously is a bit of a rhetorical question, but why is it such a threat, and what are they doing to try and stifle that in the United States and globally? I would think that one of the most basic human rights that an individual has is the right to speak their mind and believe what they want to believe. Any political view, any religious view, any human view, whatever, that they have the right to believe it. And it may not jive with the rest of humanity, but as long as, again, they don't violate the three pillars of human nature, conservatism, the right to life, the right to liberty, the right to private property, then you can essentially believe what you want to. I tend to lean more towards on that libertarian flavor on this issue, where people can believe what they want to. I'm going to live my life by my example, by the beliefs that I have, the core values that I have, the morality that I have, my religious views that I have. I'm going to live my life and represent in my community in that manner. And when people like that, if it resonates with them, they're going to do the same thing. If not, they're going to go on their own path. And you do you, I do me. I'm not going to enforce my views on you. You're not going to enforce your views on me. And we can all live a happy, nice little society, right? Is that the way things are going? No, that's not quite how things are going right now. So, of course, the government, when feeling threatened, they have to stifle some type of freedom of speech. The latest coming out of the nation of Brazil, I'm sure you've heard in the past week, that Brazil is now banning Twitter, formerly known as Twitter, now known as X, owned by Elon Musk, where they say, according to the federal judge down in Brazil, they say the reason for the ban is because that they did not have a representative for the company of Twitter or X in the country to be able to go to court and defend the company in their local jurisdiction. So therefore, without any representation, they're going to ban X. Now, it has been challenged, but according to the story I saw earlier today, is that ban on X has been upheld, and that's going to take effect, if it's not already, it's going to take effect relatively soon. And the bigger question that I have is, why would they want to ban it? Now, the news broke after the two-hour interview that Elon Musk had done with former President Donald Trump. And again, in the Donald Trump brilliance of reaching out to new voters, new individuals, and reaching out to any platform that he can, unlike a certain other presidential candidate like a Kamala Harris, that Donald Trump has been on any possible platform that he can, including podcasts, which I think is a very big asset for him to try and win over new voters, or at least get his information out for people that actually want to care about policy on what he actually stands for. Get away from the persona, get away from the rhetoric, get away from the smoke and mirrors, and just listen to what he has to say. And they can take away with it what they want. And after that conversation is when Brazil said, yeah, you know what? We don't want that much freedom of speech because Donald Trump's a Nazi or a racist or a fascist or whatever you want to believe. And therefore, we need to go ahead and ban him in the nation of Brazil by just banning the entire platform of X because of all the quote unquote anti-Semitism and all the hate speech and all the violence and whatever else that the media has tried to gear up, saying that since Elon Musk has taken it over and has allowed true freedom of speech on the platform, at least more so than any other time before, that now it's a threat. They like to use this term, the threat to democracy. And because there's content out there that's not necessarily the most popular content with the mainstream or with the authoritarian style of government, they have to find a way to silence it. I bring this up because I want to bring it back down to the home front now. When we have, again, a presidential ticket that is the most radical presidential ticket that we've ever seen, and that is open to censoring freedom of speech. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's a First Amendment that we have in the Constitution that allows the freedom of speech, that allows the freedom of expression thereof, allows the freedom of religion, and that the government allows the freedom of the press in order for us to actually do journalism and reporting and actually comment and question and investigate and research and find out what the government's doing. We have the right to do that, and we have the right to express our opinions without the government's infringement. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe I've missed it. Joe Biden apparently says that there's a clause underneath the Second Amendment where we get to have the right to keep and bear arms. He says that there's clauses underneath that that allows the government to decide what type of firearms we're allowed to have, when we're allowed to have them, who's allowed to have them. He says there's clauses underneath there. I haven't been able to find them. Maybe it's like one of those national treasure moments where it's like written in invisible ink and you have to put lemon juice on it and under a certain light in order to find those clauses. But Joe Biden says that they're there, so I'm going to take him at his word because that guy's never wrong, right?
I want to be clear. I'm not going nuts.
I'm just clarifying. So maybe there's a clause under the First Amendment that says that you're allowed to have freedom of speech as long as it doesn't infringe upon the speech that we don't want you to have. So therefore, we need to control that type of censorship. And Tim Walz, vice presidential candidate under Congress, has already said that he's all about trying to censor that type of freedom of speech. He's already said he's open to it, that there's no true such thing as freedom of speech, and therefore we should be able to censor it. Now, as far as I've seen, the only type of censorship that we've seen has been from conservative messages on social media. The other side gets kind of free rein. And in fact, terrorists have been able to hold Twitter accounts. And that was before, by the way, Elon Musk was on there when Jack Dorsey still had it. We've seen Mark Zuckerberg that's tried to CYA, if you know what I'm talking about, when it comes to censorship on his Meta platforms with Facebook and other places. Google does a great job of it as well. But they don't seem, for some reason, to censor the content of maybe the college students that are back on campus that are protesting against Israel. Now, to put this into perspective, we had a DNC convention of Kamala Harris talking about Israel having the right to defend itself, which is a really great trigger word for them, just kind of a general broad scheme of, yeah, we kind of sort of support Israel, even though we don't like them, we don't like Benjamin Netanyahu, but they have a right to defend themselves. Which is funny because we don't have any say on whether they actually defend themselves or not. It's not like we control the nation of Israel. Chuck Schumer calling for a special election to boot out Benjamin Netanyahu. I don't know how he has the right to say that we're going to boot out Benjamin Netanyahu. All of that leading up to the fact that conservatives have been censored and they're okay with it. And then we get this type of rhetoric coming from the mainstream media that's not censored, but yet they're not doing their due diligence to try and question what the government's doing so they don't get censored. There was a piece out of the New York Times that happened over the weekend, The Critic's Notebook, by a writer known as Jennifer Zalia. I'm going to go with that. Jennifer Zalia. Here's what the headline said. The Constitution is sacred, but is it also dangerous? Whoa. Now, this is the same party that has implemented things like the 1619 Project, saying that we're a bunch of slave-owning, property-owning, white racist bigots that started this nation. This is the same side that said that you need to apologize for your whiteness and you need to apologize for your alpha maleness because you need to be a beta male in society. This is the same side that apologizes for the United States and burns the American flag while saying that the nation's terrible while never leaving because they recognize that if they leave, they don't have the same rights to do what they're doing anywhere else. Because of the protections of the Constitution of the United States, one of the best founding documents that that humanity has ever seen. Here's what she goes on to say, this Jennifer Zalia. After all, and I'm not going to read all of it, but I'm going to read a couple of these paragraphs. After all, Trump became president in 2016 after losing the popular vote but winning the Electoral College. And she says in parentheses, article number two, he appointed three justices to the Supreme Court. Article number three, two of whom were confirmed by senators representing just 44% of the population. Article one, according to her, these three justices helped to overturn Roe v. Wade, a reversal from which most Americans disagreed. The eminent legal scholar worried about opinion polls showing, quote, a dramatic loss in faith of democracy, writes in a new book, No Democracy Lasts Forever. Quote, it is important for Americans to see that these failures stem from the Constitution itself. Now, let's break down a few of these, shall we? Because you're right, the Constitution allows for this process to happen, but notice how when the Supreme Court made radical violations of the Constitution, like, I don't know, throwing it out there, the acceptance of Obamacare and merging a sixth of the U.S. economy into the federal government's purview and regulation based on the healthcare industry because of Obamacare, that's not in the Constitution. They try to use the whole general welfare clause, but we don't have enough time to go down that road, even though that's not what the general welfare clause into the federal government's actually all purview about. And regulation based on the healthcare industry because of Obamacare. Wait a second. Is it, was that me or was that you? I don't know who that was. That's okay. Doesn't really matter. The Article 2 of the Electoral College is one of the biggest things that sticks out to me as a big red flag for this article of the New York Times. Trump became president in 2016 after losing the popular vote but winning the Electoral College based on Article number 2. And they say and that's because of a failure that stems from the Constitution itself. Ladies and gentlemen, this is another big push for the national popular vote, which many states have jumped on board with. And if this is the case, then the Electoral College is going to be null and void, and we're going to have five different cities across the nation choose the presidency every single year. The problem with that is what the early founders recognized was that you cannot have a popular vote in the nation to choose a presidential race. According to many of the founders in the Federalist Papers, when they were writing and supporting the Constitution, they openly said that we cannot have what they quoted as ill-informed voters that know nothing outside of their jurisdiction or their communities or their states making decisions for other communities, which we're seeing today. Even with a massive information wave that happened across this nation where you can Google something, even though it may be censored or limited on what you're actually allowed to see, that information is out there that you can find and that you can be educated on other issues. And yet we are still the most ill-informed voters in the nation when it comes to understanding what other communities need, which is why politics and the basis and the foundation of this Constitution was set forth to allow local communities in the states to actually handle the majority of these issues. But these are arguments that they're using for the ill-informed voters to get them riled up and for them to think that this is going to be a transition, is what Barack Obama said. It was a fundamental transformation of this United States, fundamentally transforming the United States by getting rid of an electoral college, by changing the Supreme Court, and by not allowing senators to confirm certain justices because they don't like that checks and balance process between the three branches. Got to take a break. We want to get your phone calls. 901-260-5926. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Stay here. Can you imagine the fact that we now have people that are openly advocating for the fact that the Constitution is dangerous to society, the foundational document that we live off of? And we know that they've tried to corrupt it, to abuse it for years on end. But the fact that now they're totally open with just saying that it's dangerous, we need to get rid of it. I mean, this is the party that said when the Supreme Court was making their decisions, upholding Obamacare multiple times and saying, by the way, that it's a lie that it was under the Commerce Clause because it was considered a tax. But yet Barack Obama was on the campaign trail around then saying that it wasn't a tax. Remember that? Lying to your face, gaslighting you beyond belief. But the only way that it was constitutional was if it was categorized as a tax under the Commerce Department for allowing them to consume a sixth of the entire U.S. economy under the healthcare industry overall. They were totally okay with that, and we were progressive, and everything was great. And stop attacking the Supreme Court. These are individuals that are great leaders, that are the black robes, that are making great decisions. They're the ones that are upholding this three branches of government. Those were their words just years ago. Now, because they reverse Roe v. Wade, which they are so livid about at the federal level, that now the Constitution is a threat because we have an electoral college that represents people outside of their five metropolitan areas in the nation, that we have a Supreme Court that actually allowed the reversal of Roe v. Wade, which they still think is a big mistake, and therefore now the Constitution, we have leaders, media leaders, that are saying the Constitution's a threat to the country. How have we gotten to this far? And where's the censorship on something like this? There used to be a time that if you said anything against the Constitution like that, that you could be tried for something like, I don't know, treason. But because this is our foundational document, but now it's openly accepted. If you say that we need to go back to the Constitution and get rid of the fourth branch of government and actually get rid of the bureaucratic agencies and the departments, then you're the one censored on social media because you're a threat. You are a domestic terrorist. You are the one that's making threats to the federal government. And that's the world that we live in today. This election, we always say it, is the most important election of our lifetime. It always is the most important election of our lifetime. And this election especially is the difference between allowing this type of rhetoric to become mainstream or for us to say, wait a second, we've pushed the boundary too far. I am all about freedom of speech. And if someone feels like they don't like the Constitution, that's cool. You have the right to express that. But when you start making it policy, because, you know, these individuals, this whoever the writer is for the New York Times here, this Jennifer Zal, if they have any influence, which they do at the federal level, then these are the types of people that are actually going to be promoting policy at the federal level. And to me, that's kind of a scary thought. 901-260-5926, 901-260-5926. This also, as we look at Brazil, that's banning Twitter or X nowadays, and we have Tim Walz that's open to banning certain content and censorship and violating freedom of speech here in the nation as well, because there's no such thing as freedom of speech. It really reiterates to me why we have to have so many different types of social media platforms. And even though this may be very controversial for some, I don't really care, but it reiterates to me why we need to have social media sites that are outside of U.S. jurisdiction. Just like the nation of Brazil, where they don't want social media coming in that challenges the propaganda that the government in that nation is trying to put out there for the general population. They don't want the naysayers, people challenging things or giving a different view, different opinion, different platform that counters what they have to say, so they have to silence it. And do you think, just throwing it out there, do you honestly think that our government doesn't try to do the same thing? That's why the very first bill that they tried to push, what, about a year ago now, when they were trying to ban TikTok, was not about TikTok whatsoever. It was a ban on any type of social media site that had servers that were outside of the nation. That's what their ultimate agenda is. TikTok, it's corrupted by China and it's ByteDance and they're collecting your data. Yeah, they are collecting my data. Facebook and Google and Meta are also collecting my data as well, and we use them every day, and that's totally fine. It's not about the data collection. It's about the content control, and they can't control the content from a server side of jurisdiction, which is why they want it gone. And TikTok's the biggest one right now that's a threat to not only us, to the Chinese, but to our own American government. To it is the Todd Starnes radio program. Andy Hoosier filling in. You can find, by the way, more information on Todd as he is traveling to Washington, D.C. You can find him online, toddstarnes.com. He's still got his book, Twilight's Last Gleaming, which, by the way, I did finish reading just last week when I actually filled in a couple last week when he was a little bit under the weather. I finished that book and loved it, absolutely, and it gets you those feel goods as we get closer to election season now that things are actually gearing up. You can find all the information, plus that, and all the great partners that Todd has on the show and the website at toddstarnes.com. Speaking of, we just talked about some of the freedom of speech battles that were going on right now. Is it truly a argument of concerns of China with TikTok and ByteDance, or is it more of a control of our federal government, just like what Brazil's doing? We don't want any outside influence on what you have because we have our own propaganda, which the propaganda is terrible, by the way. We don't believe what Kamala Harris is saying. We don't believe because she's not even talking to the public. So what is there to believe? They're not transparent, and we're just expected to just go along with it because we don't hear anything else. And the last bill that they tried to ban with TikTok was not about TikTok, but any foreign-based social media site. Why? Because they don't like the content out there that other nations are trying to give us, whether it's accurate or not. That's up for you and I to decide. I get it. TikTok, someone said there's like a 60-40 ratio of like anti-Israeli content on there. I don't see that. I'm on TikTok, and most of mine is like rock bands and stand-up comedians and people that give really bad dad jokes. So my wife absolutely hates my TikTok feed, but that's essentially what's on mine. I don't get my information from there. And when I do, I take that with a grain of salt. People are, well, some are conspiracy theorists. Some just give really bad information because I'm smart enough to recognize what they're saying may or may not be true or to pique my interest to go do my own research. I get it. A lot of people don't do that. But if we only allow Facebook and Google and Twitter, I mean, thank God we have Twitter and Elon Musk or X now that is allowing some of that freedom of speech to counter that. But it's become so political divisive there that now there's just like, oh, it's a right-wing social media platform. Freedom of speech, man. one of the most important things that we can have. And apparently there is a ticket running for president that's not about that. And we're seeing it, what's happening globally. And that's going to come here unless we make our right decisions relatively soon. Speaking of, the First Amendment is under attack. But now's a way that you can protect your own constitutional rights just by using your cell phone. As Patriot Mobile, great partners with us here on the Todd Starnes radio program, is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. They provide support and always support freedom of speech and freedom of religion, which is why we're proud to partner with them here on the program. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you access to all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage you've been using, but you don't fund the big cell companies that actually fight against your own agenda. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you help support organizations like First Liberty, Alliance Defending Freedom, Concerned Women for America, and so many more. Plus, their U.S. 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes the switching easy. You can keep your number, you can keep your phone, or you can even upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Here's what you do. Go to patriotmobile.com/Todd, or you can call 972-PATRIOT. When you use that promo code, you get free activation. So you can join and make the switch today. PatriotMobile.com/Todd. That's PatriotMobile.com/Todd or call 972-PATRIOT. Patriot Mobile partners with us right here on the Todd Starnes radio program, which, by the way, let's go right to it as we go to our Patriot Mobile newsmaker hotline and get to our next guest here on the Todd Starnes radio program as we talk about the Trump Code, the latest book from this next guest, as we talk about the legacy of Donald Trump. The first 100 days, what would that look like under a new Trump administration? And how different could it be between now and what we saw when he took office in 2016? Really happy to have on the show Mr. Troy Anderson. Troy, how are you, my friend?
Hi, Andy. It's good to be on your show.
Yeah, appreciate you very much joining us here. Let's talk about, first off, congrats on the book. Let's talk about Donald Trump and not only this administration, but let's look at the legacy that he's built now on where he stands on, the stage of history. We hear the conflicting reports, obviously, because it's so early in, that they say he's the worst president in American history. But I don't think history itself, when we're 100 years down the line, is going to tell that story. But does he relate to some of the greats in the nation, of a Ronald Reagan or an Abraham Lincoln or a George Washington? Is he that caliber, do you think, already?
Yeah, my wife and I, we just watched the Reagan movie this weekend. And the defining thing that about that movie is that Reagan fought against communism. In fact, Doc Bishore is the father of the pastor here at Mariners Church in Irvine, California. He wrote what was called the Doc Bishore Prophecy Study Bible. He actually gave that to President Reagan back in the early 1980s because a guy in his class worked at Reagan's ranch. Reagan read that and later told Doc that that contributed to some of his policy that led to the, you know, fall of the Berlin Wall and collapse of the Soviet Union. So that's one of the things that he fought against. He fought against communism and essentially, you know, now sort of morphed into globalism. And Trump has been, you know, pushing against communism and globalism. When my first book was called The Babylon Code, Exposé of Globalism, came out in 2015, this pastor read it. He was so inspired by it. He delivered an entire box of these books to the Trump team in early 2016. And then Trump announced Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo as president. And then he won bombshell election and stunned the world. And so I think that's the defining question before us in this upcoming election. You know, are we going to elect Trump and push back against this globalist agenda that we see, this communist agenda? Or are we going to elect, you know, Kamala Harris, who's closely aligned with the World Economic Forum's Great Reset Plan, the United Nations Agenda 2030? I mean, it's two strikingly different directions that we can go. And this is a critical moment in American history.
That is very true. The ticket, we've said before on the program that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz is, in my opinion, the most radical extreme ticket we've ever seen in American history. And that goes to Barack Obama. That goes to Jimmy Carter. That goes to FDR back in the day with the Great New Deal that he advocated for, with this push for socialism and communism down this road of authoritarian government, that they've taken things to an entirely different level. And while Ronald Reagan battled communism from overseas, and then we saw the McCarthyism inside, and we tried to weed out communists from within our own government, it's taken it to an entirely different level. And now it's open, it's in your face, and it's a presidential ticket. I mean, that's a scary thought, isn't it?
Yeah, we've never seen anything like this. They're just blatantly open about how radical of policies and agenda they want to promote. So, I mean, I think just look back at the pandemic. Remember what happened? The closure of the churches, the lockdowns, the loss of freedom, sort of this atmosphere of fear that the government was you know, imposing on the American people, sort of this authoritarian kind of sense. Now, as we move towards the election, they seem to, they eased off that, right? So they're sort of being on the good, best behavior right now, as best as they can be, you know, because they want to get elected. But imagine what's going to happen if they do get elected. So I think, you know, we could see an acceleration toward this great reset plan and all these things these globalists want to do and communists and socialists. So I wrote the Trump Code because I really want to encourage people to go out and vote and get involved, pray for our country. The theme that runs through the Trump Code is this is our Nineveh moment. I did this interview with Billy Graham back in 2013 for a seven-part series of stories. And the thing he said that struck me is he said, when God sent the prophet Jonah to Nineveh to warn of judgment, the king and the people repented. He believed the same thing had happened again, this time in America. So in our second book, Trumpocalypse, we called for a national day of repentance. It actually happened. It was called The Return. It was on the National Mall. 42 million people watched it. President Trump flew over and ringed one and issued a proclamation for a day of prayer and return, the first president to do so since Abraham Lincoln. And then flash forward to April 8th of this year, we had this eclipse, and it went through all these towns called Nineveh. So I wrote a story for Charisma. Is this our Nineveh moment? That's the theme of the Trump Code, our chance to turn back to God. You know, if we do, I think we'll see a turnaround, this revival grow. And so this is a critical juncture.
It really is. Talk about, for a second, Donald Trump's under scrutiny right now for the fact that he's not taking a firm stance on wanting to do like a federal ban on abortion. And therefore, some religious individuals are saying that, well, Donald Trump's starting to waver. He's starting to get weak on the issue. And we need to stand firm because that the religious side of the conservative Republican movement is starting to dwindle when it comes to their influence in the new Republican Party under Donald Trump. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. In fact, he's done something that people have tried to do for a long time, which is reverse Roe v. Wade and bring it back down to the statewide levels. I'm pretty sure that we know his stance on this issue. I'm pretty sure that we know his stance on these faith-based issues that he's proven himself on in his past administration. Why the criticism now? Why are we seeing such a pushback now from within our own ranks when I thought we were pretty unified on the message?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the central things that he helped accomplish during his term in office. Is he's appointed those justices who ultimately, you know, overturned Roe v. Wade. I mean, it was a huge miracle that even occurred. And so, yeah, the question has been returned to the states now, and we're seeing this, you know, divided nation, just like we're divided many different ways. Is the criticism of what his, you know, policies are now justified? I think from what I've read, it sounds like he's saying this is a state issue, which it is. And hopefully the states will, you know, do the right thing here and you know, limit abortion. I mean, these policies of the Biden or the Harris Waltz, you know, abortion up to the time of birth. I mean, it's barbaric. It's monstrous. No, you know, civilized society does things like that. So I think we hopefully President Trump will, you know, continue this push to limit this to, as much as possible.
Yeah, that is right, too. We're talking with Troy Anderson, author of the latest book, The Trump Code, Exploring Time Travel, Nikola Tesla, and the Trump Lineage. Let's talk about the first 100 days. What would the agenda look like in order for Donald Trump to really make an impact and start pushing back on this globalism, like you mentioned, this communism, this authoritarianism that is essentially the fourth branch of government right now, all the bureaucratic agencies? What would that need to look like, or what has he said? I mean, he's talked about wanting to limit the IRS. He's talked about wanting to just abolish the Department of Education, which I think is vastly needed. Is that stuff actually possible? Can we get that done and actually see the government downsize a little bit?
I think the great thing about a potential second term for Trump is that in the first term, he sort of learned his way around Washington, D.C. and figured out who's who. And so they now got a very a detailed plan about how to sort of dismantle the deep state, reverse all these crazy policies, the you know, mass you know, invasion at the border of millions and millions of people. We don't know who's coming to this country. And, you know, this bureaucratic state that's become so powerful and you know, is completely undemocratic. The Democrats talk about, you know, democracy, but what they're presiding over is the most undemocratic government we've ever seen in our history of our country. And so I think President Trump in his first 100 days is going to take radical steps to begin to dismantle all this, appoint people to top, you know, agencies, CIA, and things like that, that can really start to crack down on this, the swamp, you know. So I'm very optimistic. He's leading in the battleground states. I think he's probably going to win, but we really need everybody to go out and vote just in overwhelming numbers. I remember Franklin Graham came here to California on several occasions and said, if we just get like 5 to 10% more of the evangelical here, Christians here in California, this state could potentially, you know, turn purple or red. Even the New York Times even had a story on that. Imagine across the country, there's about a third of Christians that don't vote, conservatives. If we just get everybody out to vote, we can overwhelm this whole election and take back this country.
Wouldn't that be nice? Last question for you, Troy, and I appreciate your time very much. We're short on time here, but the question is there enough hunger from American voters to do that change, to do that drastic, quote-unquote, reset of our federal government in that regulatory state, that authoritarianism? There is a lot of what Rush Limbaugh used to call the low-information voter, going along with what they said, and if you get a good freebie from the federal government, then people would like you, and you'll continue to get those votes from those type of people. Kamala Harris doesn't even have a platform. She was known as the most unpopular VP, and yet she's getting a rally of Democrats circling around her and defending her and supporting her in this race. That tells me that that's a list of low information voters that don't even know what she stands for, but she's not Donald Trump. Is there enough of the hunger from American voters to make that change and actually start putting us in the right direction, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. You've got a lot of low information voters and people that are just, you know, looking for the government handouts, the freebies. But, you know, I think the good news is that over the last, you know, especially the last 4 years, it's been sort of a huge awakening of the people becoming aware of the deep state, the dangers we face. I mean, you know, that they've talked about re-education camps in different parts of the country, especially during the pandemic. You know, there's all kinds of potentially very highly dangerous things that might happen if this administration gets in there. And so, but, you know, I wrote the Trump Code. We may even turn this into a film. We're working on that right now, perhaps before the election, to really inspire people to vote, pray for our country, turn back to God. And I think if we do the right thing here, we can see God intervene and see a big turnaround here.
It's going to be an interesting race for sure. Again, I've never seen a race like this one, but I am optimistic. I'm the eternal optimist here, but we're always optimistic about the direction that we're going to go. And everything's done with a reason, which, like you said, that divine intervention from God or a higher power, whatever people believe, that always plays a hand as well. Troy Anderson, go and check it out, The Trump Code. You can find it on Amazon, other places as well. Troy, we appreciate the time very much, my friend. Let's do it again soon.
Thank you so much. Hey. Great honor.
Yeah, you bet. Appreciate it. We'll do it again soon. Until then, got to take a break. One more segment right around the corner here on the Todd Starnes Radio Program. Man, how the show flies right on by. Welcome back to it. It is the Todd Starnes Radio Program. My name is Andy Hoosier. I'm filling in for Todd. He'll be back at it again tomorrow here on the program. He's been flying out to Washington, D.C., so always great to be able to fill in. Such an honor to always fill in for Todd whenever he gets a chance. So always appreciate the opportunity. Let's have some fun here on the program. 901-260-5926 if you want to jump on for the last couple of minutes on the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Thanks again to Troy. Is it possible? Is it possible to start diminishing the administrative state? I know that sounds like a challenge. I've never in my life seen government get smaller once they start something new. It continues to grow. It continues to get bigger. And we continue to have less and less rights. As a 35-year-old millennial, I do not have any privacy rights. In fact, my generation, my growing up, was the last generation that got to grow up without computers in front of our face the entire time. And then transition to my high school. Well, not even high school. At least, I don't know, maybe for me I was kind of left in the dark because I wasn't involved in the tech stuff. I got my first cell phone, and it was a flip cell phone in high school when I started driving, because that way if I was going to a sporting event or out with my friends, I could text or call my parents and let them know what was going on. But that was the technology at the time. I remember texting girls at the time or texting friends and have to push the button multiple times to get to the certain letter. You remember that? Nowadays, it's right on your screen, and you do like the swipe thing, and it's all done, or you do the voice to text. No, I had to push the button multiple times on my flip phone when I was in high school. I didn't even get my first social media page until I got to college when I opened up a Facebook page. I skipped the entire MySpace thing, and I kind of missed that because that would have been awesome to actually have your bands and your favorite music on there, and that's what my or that's the Was it MySpace? I think it was MySpace, yeah, where you had all the music on there and you got to kind of set your profile with as soon as someone went to your page, then it started playing music. I want those days again. I didn't even get to enjoy that, but I want those days again. I started a Facebook page in college and I had no clue what I was doing. And I didn't want anything to do with it. And I was barely on it. Nowadays, you have kids that are in the fourth grade that are walking around with their cell phones on their social media watching YouTube videos all the time. My daughter, who is in fifth grade, she just turned 10 in June. She does not have a cell phone. And she is the only person in her entire fifth grade class that does not have a cell phone. The only one. And I got to tell you, I don't care. I really don't care. I am not going to get her a cell phone. They have been wanting to. And you know, she was like, well, if we just have the one where you don't have a whole lot of text and you just have the limited context where it's just like you and mom. And I'm, no. But what if I'm out somewhere? Well, then someone else has a cell phone that can get a hold of us. We know where you're at. We know what's going on. It's totally fine. I'm not going to do it. I know it's an unpopular position nowadays. Andy, she's going to be behind on technology. Well, maybe so. But I'm going to teach her how to like churn butter with a barrel. Okay, maybe not that far, but I'm going to teach her how to garden. I'm going to teach her how to survive. I am preparing her for the Terminator zombie apocalypse, and whatever happens in society, she's going to be prepared for that because she's going to live off the grid, or at least have the ability to live off the grid. I know that's a bit extreme, but I don't really care. That does it for us today. Andy Hoosier sitting in for Todd Starnes. What a great honor, as always. We love it, Todd. Thanks so much. And the entire team with KUAM. Until then, Todd's back at it again tomorrow. It is the Todd Starnes radio program. Everybody have a great post-Labor Day Tuesday. We'll see you on the radio. Bye.